Hello and welcome back to Commodity Conversations by the team at Mercado, the podcast where we keep you up to date with the latest trends, drivers and moves in livestock, grain and oilseed and fibre markets. My name's Olivia Agar. Thanks for listening into episode 269. Today we're wrapping up the key insights and market dynamics across a range of commodities for the first quarter of 2024. Mercado's latest quarterly market insights report is being released this week. If you're on the mailing list, keep an eye out on your inbox. So today we have Robert Herman and Ethan Woolley joining me to talk through some of the most important themes and watch points across cattle, sheep, grain and oilseed and wool markets. We'll jump straight into the episode today. I hope you enjoy it.
Okay, well, on the quarterly report, let's start with grain. And Liv, how's the wheat market been performing in the first quarter of 2024?
Thanks, Rob. The first quarter is usually a pretty tight, quiet time for commodity markets, but this year we've seen a bit more of a bearish trend in the global ag markets than we'd usually see. Heavy supplies have been coming out of the Black Sea region, and that's really put a squeeze on prices, pushing them down to three-year lows at one point during the quarter. But since then, the markets seem to have found a bit of a floor and wheat prices have moved in a more positive direction. So some of the things that have been supporting that is that there's been wet weather in Europe, but that's only really offsetting the continued good news on wheat crops coming out of the US and Russia. So we saw a pullback in corn acreage in the US, which has added a bit of support to the grain complex in general. But really the one to watch out for is the new crop in Russia. You know, we've got a huge crop currently on the forecast for there, which we know would be bearish for prices looking forward. And that would probably relegate really Russia to being another year of the price setter in terms of global prices. But what we're seeing is that conditions have been pretty dry. So that's something we're keeping an eye on looking forward.
So that's a good summary about wheat. Canola is a really important commodity here in Australia, and everybody wants to know about that. Is it the same story for canola, Liv?
We've seen a bit of a switch in directions for canola in the last quarter. So it was getting a lot of pressure from a really big Brazilian soybean crop that was weighing down on canola values. But then in March, we saw both international and local markets improve. And deteriorating seasonal conditions in Europe was really one of the key drivers for that. So we've seen slow and eventually lower expected sowing rates in Europe, which has really given canola prices a boost, and there's finally getting up to some more respectable levels locally. Then we've, you know, the other thing to watch as well is the escalation of problems in the Middle East. If the crude market gets caught up in some of those issues, we could see a hike in canola values. And then locally, we've seen good conditions on the East Coast, but we know WA remains pretty stubbornly dry. So there's a bit of a risk premium being built into those conditions as well.
So in the quarterly report, we talk about price a lot, and we talk about supply also, global supply, but we're now just about getting ready for sowing here. It's just started in some areas, and I know some of the people that we talk to are quite excited about the conditions. How are they looking for the winter crop across the country, Liv?
I just mentioned WA there, and summer and autumn was very dry in WA. We know that the next month is really going to be the most important in terms of timing and the amount of rain received. Not that I like to go to the worst outcome, but without a good break, canola will probably be the first crop to see area abandoned. Moving closer east, if we look at South Australia, areas have been mostly dry for the first quarter. They had good rains December, January, which topped up the tanks a bit and put a bit of subsoil moisture in the ground. But February and March were pretty dry, which means we'll all be sort of watching for that traditional Anzac Day break there. And then, you know, you look in complete contrast over in the east, and the rain we've seen so far in autumn has really set up crop as well for the season ahead. From Queensland Downs to the Victorian Wimmera, the soil moisture is pretty full. It's not perfect anywhere, of course, as in any season. I know there are parts of the Western districts of Victoria that are still looking for rain, but you know, the flip side of that Easter rain event in the north is really that there's been a bit of damage done to the sorghum crop there, which is seeing some downgrades. But looking at the winter crop in general, things are looking pretty good, Rob.
So, Liv, while we've got you here, let's talk about a commodity that really has given everybody a lot to talk about in the last 2 years, and that's the sheep and lamb market. We know the volatility's been there. What's been driving the price, the fluctuations in the price in the lamb market in this first quarter of 2024?
It has been a really interesting one to watch, Rob. And coming into the quarter, the market was really rallying strongly. We had renewed processor interest, some decent summer rains, and the market reached its peak in January. But that kind of momentum can sometimes lead the market to overextending, and it probably did to a degree. And we saw the lamb market quickly turn into a downward trend that persisted across much of the quarter. And the dry conditions in February and March across much of the sheep producing regions in the southeast was a big driver of that. Of course, those months were really dry, and we've seen that continued elevated turnoff in WA as well. But even just looking at the Meat and Livestock Australia slaughter reports for the first quarter of the year, we saw, you know, a record breaking over 800,000 lambs and sheep processed. So that supply factor has been a huge driver of the downturn we've seen since then. So if we're sort of looking on balance, the Eastern States Trade Lamb Indicator averaged 669 cents per kilo carcass weight in the first quarter, which isn't anything to get too excited about compared to recent years, but it's about a 40% lift on the market lows we saw in quarter three of last year.
So you mentioned in the report that demand has strengthened, and you just talked about slaughter numbers there. Just explain a little bit more about what you're seeing there, Liv.
Well, with lamb slaughter running at record levels so far in 2024, prices are close to levels of years when we've actually seen slaughter 15 to 20% lower, which is really good news because it means that consumers are now willing to pay a higher price for the same amount of lamb that we saw those few years ago. So we run a model that looks at, you know, price versus supply over history. And if we look at the year-to-date prices and Meat and Livestock Australia's forecast for 26.1 million head to be slaughtered this year, it does show us that demand's actually strengthened compared to the last 6 years. And some of the key drivers behind that has been renewed demand for Australian lamb and mutton from the Middle East. Also, markedly improving demand out of the US as well after a pretty lackluster 2023. We're seeing that cold storage levels of lamb in the US in particular have hit 12-year lows, which is a really good sign. So what this does mean is that when we do see a slowdown in lamb supply, like we've got forecast over the next 2 years, it should mean stronger prices.
That sounds promising, Liv. And of course, anybody who wants to see all the detail about lamb, sheep, wool, grains, and cattle can get onto the quarterly report. I know with the lamb market, we always used to look at the winter prices as being something to look forward to, actually, because supply tightened and prices rallied. What are you seeing, and what do you think we can expect from the winter this year?
It's been a couple of years since we've seen that traditional winter price rally for the lamb market, but there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic that that will happen this year. While, you know, March and April usually bring a fair few disruptions in terms of the public holidays, if we're looking out to sort of forward pricing for May, June, July in the southeast, that's looking more at the, you know, $7.20 to $7.80 range, which is a dollar ahead of where we're sort of sitting at now for the market. So it is a real positive. And if we compare what we saw last year in terms of those prices for winter, it was averaging more at the $5.70 market. So we're heading into a much more positive position that we will see that tightening up of supply as we head into winter, and it should be a bit of a price rally with it.
Well, that sounds positive, and I guess we're all looking forward to putting this volatile season behind us and hopefully something more stable going forward.
Yeah, and speaking of more stability, there hasn't been a lot of movement in the wool market of late, Rob. So, you know, is it still playing a waiting game, or are there some positive signs there?
Well, you're right. If you're talking about stability, I mean, that is one thing you can say about the wool market. Although at these levels, I'm not sure it's a positive thing to talk about. The market over the period that this quarter report's looking at, you know, moved marginally. I think the Eastern Market Indicator lifted 1.5% in Australian dollar terms. In US dollar terms, it lifted a little bit more because the Australian dollar was moving a little bit as well. But by and large, there was no sort of real highlights. The market was moving sideways, is what we kept saying week after week. I think if we're looking for positives, and that is that in a global economic situation where things have been very lackluster, you know, we've actually held where we are. You know, we know that wool is a commodity that relies on consumer demand. It's a discretionary spend. So, you know, it's not the first thing consumers decide to spend their money on. So they need a bit of excess money to spend on things such as wool and apparel fiber and furnishings, etc. The other positive, I think, and I noticed in the report that we talk about the global stocks aren't high. Even though we've had this relatively long period of sort of mediocre prices in Australia, our local stocks haven't grown either. We've maintained sort of around that 38,000 barrels a week sales, which is roughly equivalent to what we shear each week in a rough calculation, Liv. So while the stocks aren't building, certainly aren't building up in Australia, and if we're hearing that stocks are a bit tight in the pipeline, then any improvement in global economic conditions will translate straight away into demand back to the auction floor because there's no sort of buffer stocks to be absorbed. So that's something we're looking forward to, Liv.
So do you think that means we're looking more for demand to stimulate the market, or is supply still the factor in that too?
No, definitely demand. And it's interesting that when we talk about a lot of other commodities, we know that supply can drive a market. You know, oversupply, undersupply can drive a market. With wool, it's clearly demand. And so we're looking forward to seeing, you know, that demand, if it does lift, as I said before, we're likely to see that stimulate straight down to the market. At the same time, you know, producers are looking at producing a slightly lower clip in the coming year. The latest wool production forecast came out and they've pulled the clip back about 3 to 5%. That's going to mean that supply is not going to ramp up and in fact may remain a bit tighter. We're also seeing the clip get a little bit finer, and that happens when the seasons are a bit tougher. We know that the average micron can move based on the season. So we're likely to see a little bit more fine wool as a percentage. So that's going to be a headwind for the fine wool market. But overall, the clip's going to be slightly less, Liv. And so, you know, that's not going to play on the market. But clearly, the overriding stimulant for the future will be demand.
Well, hopefully it starts to move in the right direction and we get a bit of an uplift coming later in this year. But what I'm really interested, one piece that was included in the report, Rob, was the question of whether wool operates in a market on its own or does it belong to and operate in a broader sort of industrial market? Can you talk to that?
Yes, well, it depends who you talk to a little bit. There are the marketers who will make statements that, you know, wool does operate on its own. But I think the reality is that we do operate in a market that is dominated by other fibres. And what that provides some challenges for wool because, you know, it's very difficult to be, you know, around 1 to 1.5% of the apparel fibre market and carry much weight. You tend to get overwhelmed, and we saw that in the EU with some of their green credentials coming through where they're disadvantaging wool against synthetic fibres. And, you know, it didn't make a lot of sense, but you have to be able to argue your case, and being the little fish in the big pond, it's a bit difficult. But that said, I've just been to the International Wool Textile Organization 93rd Congress, which was in Adelaide. And one of the things coming through is that, you know, wool is seen as having a really good place in the environmental credentials of of fibres, and but the challenge is to get the story out there. And I think we'd have to say that up until now, you know, if the marketers have that story and it's a compelling story, it hasn't cut through, because right now we're seeing our prices struggling and depressed. I mean, they're no better than they were 10, 15 years ago, as many wool growers will tell you. And so to get that traction, you know, we have to differentiate it, and that's the challenge in a big market. But as Andrew Woods, who supplies a lot of information to us on, and especially on the quarterly report, he will tell you that to date, you know, follow the money, follow the GDP growth in the northern hemispheres. That will tell you the direction of wool. And so, I think I wouldn't be holding my breath to think that we're suddenly going to become a unique fibre that operates outside of the other market, but we will be on the coattails of the likes of cotton and other apparel fibres.
Something to strive for anyway, that differentiation, especially in terms of the environmental credentials and sustainability, though. So good to hear it was a big focus for the Congress that you went to.
Yes, it was. And one thing that you can say about the wool industry, Liv, is that they are a very optimistic bunch. They're very passionate. And an eye-opener for me was that, I mean, we know how passionate wool growers are, but when you see people coming from Italy and Germany and China and Japan and France who have the same passion in that pipeline, it really does give you a positive feeling. But let's bring Ethan into the conversation, Liv. And Ethan, you've been looking at the cattle market. Welcome to this discussion. Government sources and the MLA, Ethan, have forecast that the national cattle herd has hit its maturity. What does that mean for the cattle industry, do you think?
Well, thanks, Rob, and thanks, Olivia, for having us on. And I guess what it means is that we're going to see a bit more supply come to the yards yet, which is sort of hard to believe considering the year we've had with supply. But yeah, MLA, the forecast that it's hit maturity and we're going to see a slight decrease in the national herd over the next 2 to 3 years. So they had 28.5 million for this year, down from 28.7 last year. And they reckon it's going to keep dropping lower into 2026 by about 6%. So what it means is that there's stock that has to be turned off in the next season or so. But we've already seen a heap of cattle come forward, which is going to impact pricing. And we've seen that happen already. We're seeing the female slaughter ratio. It's been above 47% the last couple of weeks. So yeah, it's been tracking ahead of schedule from MLA's projections already. So a lot of pressure happening on pricing at the moment.
Now, we heard from Liv about the favourable weather conditions on the East Coast. And the last time we saw this really big break was coming out of the drought in 2020. Those favourable season conditions then pushed the price higher, but the price has just struggled to push through to higher levels on this last rainfall event, if you like. Ethan, why do you think that is?
Well, it is because of this supply situation. There's a couple of favourable market indicators for the cattle industry, but the supply is a bit of a problem child to be dealt with at the moment. We did see when the rain did fall, particularly earlier in the year on the East Coast and the most recent fall, that prices did bounce a little bit with restocker demand. Cattle prices almost jumped $1 over January, young cattle prices, that is. But as the conditions deteriorated, or at least stayed a bit drier, the supply pressure just continued to build, and that's really pushed the pricing back down. So we jump a little bit, but tended to go a bit lower in this quarter. And it's just the weight of numbers. So this quarter one at the sale yards, we've seen 33% more cattle than we did in the same quarter last year. So it's unseasonal supply. Yeah, even with favourable rainfall and favourable export market condition, it's a lot of cattle to deal with and to get through the supply chain. In a season with normal supply, the pricing should be better for cattle. Angus Brown, who does analysis for Mercado, he's been looking into that, and the cattle prices at the moment, it is highly discounted compared to the beef export values. And that's accounting for the sort of uplift in slaughter capacity as well. Essentially, to begin April, we're seeing that the EC is down 200 cents from the 90 CL, so to lean export beef, and it should be much closer. But there's just plenty of cattle to choose from at the moment. But on the West Coast, which we should talk about as well, there hasn't been that supply issue. It's been on trend with the five-year average. However, without the lack of rainfall to get restocked demand there, it's still being pushed down in terms of pricing.
Yes, look, that's really interesting. I'll probably answer my own question by saying that the difference between now and 2020 is just the size of the herd, Ethan. So what's that mean in your view? What do you think that means for the cattle market as we head into the future, head towards winter now?
Over Easter, particularly in Queensland, we did see massive rainfall, and that's going to dictate some of the fortunes for the cattle market in the coming months. Firstly, it created logistics issues. So cattle that would have come to market didn't, and either they couldn't get them there or there were producers holding on to see if the market would firm and have that dollar jump again like it did in January. But I guess this backlog of supply creates its own sort of issues, because if there's not enough cattle for the abattoirs 1 week, prices are going to jump back in because they want to fill that capacity. But also we're going to see some big supply waves come as well, particularly when we think about public holidays as well, impacting slaughter shifts as well. And we've also seen that they'll probably get an oat crop in as well. So there's going to be feed to keep some cattle on. But looking ahead, traditionally over winter, the price would rise as your search for finished stock becomes harder. But in theory, in a normal year, that export demand that we've got would help push the prices higher. But there's a couple of things that will probably keep lid on prices this winter. The first being that there's a lot of cattle on feed currently. And that means that when the processors look for that finished cattle supply, they're going to have enough to work with in the short term. And it is going to take a bit of time for all that grain-fed cattle to work through the system, particularly when we have this level of grass-fed cattle supply coming through as well. And we're also seeing that the market's still reactive to rainfall in the very short term. So the restockers can see that long-term market opportunity. We've spoken about it a lot on Mikado with the US. So what that is allowing us is to sort of kick the can along the road with the supply that we have, which is good and bad, but it will impact the prices that you're going to see over autumn and winter. It's good because we don't want a big supply of cattle that we know is going to exit the system the next 2 years to come forward all at once. The funnel isn't likely to get bigger at the processing end in the short term. So just making sure we manage the flow of cattle through to that is really important for pricing. But we'll also see that the longer we hold on to cattle, the longer it will take for that ecky to retrace the gap it's got between the export pricing. In the short term, it's probably going to track sideways, but hopefully we get a bit of rain just to stop the flow of cattle, because if that supply does come forward and comes forward all at once, there's going to be, you can charge tickets to get in.
Yep. So what I'm hearing, Ethan, is the positives are that number one is that the meat price is demonstrating that there's good export demand. So that's good. Supply is, while we have a big herd, supply is manageable while we have a good season. So again, we'll be watching the rainfall, I think.
Absolutely. And again, the long-term opportunity with the export markets is it's going to be really good for the cattle industry. It's just we've got so many cattle that we almost don't know what to do with them at this stage. So just got to work through that one step at a time.
Yeah. Well, of course, and you mentioned about the rainfall and keeping cattle on. It means that that's good for farmers or cattle producers, because it means they've got the feed to take the cattle to heavier weights. Those heavier weights are worth more money when they sell them. And providing it the demand can continue and supply doesn't overwhelm it, then we can look positively forward. And maybe that's just me, Ethan, with the glass half full. But I think you should pass on to your team at Mikado also the congratulations on another great quarterly report. And look, I'll hand back to you, Liv. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Rob and Ethan, for this quick update on the quarterly report. And if anyone hasn't got access to the report, please shoot us through an email at ask@mikado.com.au and we can get a copy out to you. Thanks, everyone.